He's known for being one of, if not the greatest British talk show host of all time. And I think for so many of us, he was probably part of our Saturday nights, you know, sitting on the couch and wondering what laugh or tear or story he could extract from one of the more than 2,000 celebrities he's had sit with him. He's coming to Adelaide. This is the news to say goodbye to us. It's a good morning, or I guess good evening to you, Sir Michael Parkinson.
Oh, it's a good evening. It is evening. Yeah, yeah. It's dark. It's 11 o'clock-ish. Typical English. Miserable day.
So you'd be absolutely... Well, it's not that great here either, but by the time you come in October, we'll have the sun out for you.
It's been lovely. I'm looking forward to it. It's been a while since I've been there, actually. I'm really looking forward to it.
But you have had such an affinity with Australia. I mean, you were even the first non-Australian to give the keynote address on Australia Day. Who was the most fascinating Australian you ever interviewed?
Well, there's one or two. I loved doing interviewing Joe Bjelke Peterson and Flo. I mean, they're the most entertaining, I thought. I don't know. I mean, there's some good ones. Kerry Packer was maybe one of the best interviews I ever did. In the true sense of journalistically speaking, I managed to sort of engage him in a way that I hadn't thought possible. Japanese and Keith Miller were great creative heroes of mine. My love of Australia started when I first started playing cricket in the Yorkshire Giant. My father, of course, who loved cricket more than I did, if that be possible, was convinced that Australia was in fact a tribe of sunburnt Yorkshiremen. And he wasn't far wrong. We had a great affinity. And then I knew when I came here, many years ago, 40 years ago now, for the first time, I knew I'd enjoy it, and I did, and I enjoyed every minute of it. I think that had I been a younger man when I first came here, I might have sort of settled here and enjoyed it very much indeed. So there you are. There's a kind of an affinity I've always had with Australia, and I found it very, therefore, very easy to get on here, all there.
Did you, this might sound like a stupid question, but did you find it easy to interview people, or because you made it look so easy, or was there so much work done in the lead up to an interview?
It I just think happened. Two things, actually, for a successful interview. You've got to do the research. You can't back off that. You can't just go and wing it. That doesn't work at all. You've got to pay the person opposite you the respect, the utmost respect, and do more interview than you're ever going, or learn more about them than you're ever going to use. But you need all that information. And that's what kind of settles them, and that's the important thing, to get them settled as quickly as possible. Get them to lean forward and trust you enough to sort of open up to you. It's a very interesting psychological thing, interviewing, and I've never learned the real trick of it, which is maybe why it works. If you think too hard about it, you probably lose it. But it's been a fascinating job all my life. I mean, I've been to, I don't know how many thousand people, but no one's been the same. Everyone's a different proposition, just similarly, as the entire human race is made up of individual people.
Did you get nervous? And were you as nervous before every interview?
Well, you're not allowed to be nervous. That's, I think, one of the most key things I say to people nowadays who ask me, if they ever do ask me about tips, I say, you're not allowed to be nervous. You can be as nervous as you like, but you mustn't show it. You mustn't reveal it to the person you're sitting opposite, because they're the ones who are in a strange and alien land, not you. You're the gaffer. You're the tour guide. You're showing them around. So, you know, give them a good time. Give them a feeling that you're in safe hands and they're going to enjoy it.
Do you have to like the person? Do you think that makes it easier or harder sitting down to interview someone?
I think if you admire a person, admire is the word, I think, the key word. If you admire a person, I think that then, therefore, you have an extra dimension to your interview, you have an extra interest, which maybe is reflected in the way you say, the way you lean forward and that sort of thing. I think that's the word, admire. Yes, of course, it helps to like people. But I've interviewed some of the most fascinating people that I've interviewed. I wouldn't wish to invite to dinner.
Really? Who's not been invited to your dinner table?
That sounds awful. But let me say straight away that out of all the people I've interviewed throughout my life, as a journalist, so I mean, God knows how many thousands they are, print and television and radio, I've very rarely made friends as such. If I made 20 friends out of all that, that would be the lot. But even that's a lot, you see, I think, because, you know, what you're doing, basically, no matter how you're doing it, newspapers, radio, television, you're doing a job. And you're the plumber who comes along every so often and asks you a few questions and does a few jobs, and that's it. There's nothing else involved.
How does that then happen when you say that you've made friends with maybe 20 of the couple of thousands of people? Is it just that you know in that moment with the world watching, the audience, the cameras, even though it's that really artificial setup, that there's just some connection there and it's just been an easy thing to carry on?
It's a very interesting question. I don't know what defines it. I suppose it's different for every person. What are you looking for in another human being? And often the people who I interviewed weren't the ones I became friendly with. Maybe it was the agent who brought them in. I don't know. Mm. But, you know, I think if you don't go seeking it, then when it happens, it's a substantial foundation, rather, for a long friendship.
All right, then, Michael Parkinson, who was the one that got away? Who didn't you get
Sinatra.
To interview?
Sinatra. Yeah. My great hero. I mean, Sinatra, we forget about Sinatra in the sense that, you know, we forget how big a star he was. He was the biggest star. Didn't need the publicity. Didn't need to be bothered with interviews with pesky journalists and that sort of thing. Didn't need to answer questions about his love life and anything like that. But what an artist. And I admired him so greatly. I met him but the once, and I was introduced to him and Mike Parkinson. Next time you're in London, Frank, you've got to do his show, Parkinson Show, Mike. You know, remember that. Yeah. 20 minutes later, I'm leaving, and I said, goodbye, Mr. Sinatra. Thank you for inviting me. And he said, goodbye, David. Oh. So I made a weird impression.
If you did have Frank Sinatra on your show, what would you have asked him? What would have been the first question?
I don't think I could have spoken, actually. I think just sing as a song, Frank. I mean, I was such a fan of his. I mean, what a singer. I play him all the time in the car. He's very old-fashioned. People look at me, you know, who's that? Who's that? Come on, the greatest singer that ever was. So I would probably have been speechless. I just asked him to sing 20 songs, and I'd just sit there and applaud and weep.
And that would be it. Has there been an interview that you just didn't feel that you did it justice? Or someone that you just knew that you didn't connect with?
Many. I mean, I don't think I was ever totally, utterly satisfied, except on a handful of occasions, with any interview. I always thought afterwards, reflecting on it, going through it, I could have done this, I could have done that. It's an imperfect thing because there's no script and it's just two people getting on together or not getting on together, as the case may be. It was endlessly fascinating because of that, because you had to try to instantaneously create a bridge between you and that person you've never met before, and you had to get that movement forward toward you from them in the first 4 or 5 minutes, because otherwise if they're sitting back in the chair just staring at you, you ain't got it, you haven't hooked the fish. So I just found it endlessly fascinating doing the job. It never bored me for a moment. It might have bored the listeners or viewers, but not me.
You're listening to Sir Michael Parkinson. He is coming to us from London. The reason why? Well, because we just announced that he is actually going to be coming here to Adelaide. A farewell tour, if you like. He'll be here in October at the Festival Theatre. What's driving you to work now? Why do you do this? Why do you want to do this?
Because I couldn't do anything else, basically. I mean, I've been doing it for so long that that's what I am. It's my entire existence in that sense. I mean, I'm very lucky because I enjoy doing it, and it allows me to work with my son, who's doing the interviews with me when he comes to Australia. One of my sons, Michael, might have been producing my shows now for 20 odd years or so. Mary, my wife, was also she was a teacher, but she also had her own TV show. So we're kind of a TV family. That's all we know about. and it's just great fun. And I'm 84 now, and I still feel able and up to talking and performing. I'm not yet totally gaga, heading that way, but not totally, not there yet. And so in the time I've got left to me, I wanted to come back to Australia, and I've achieved that object. And it may be that this is my last visit to Australia. That's the way I'm looking at it. You know, I'm returning back there just for 1 month time. And if that's the case, I will be happy and contented that I found it at all, and I've had a good time there.
Working with your son, Mike, he's an interviewer, your wife, Mary. Do people come over to your house and think, well, I'm going to be put under the pump here with some pretty serious questions?
No. Talk to a TV family. No, not at all. We've always managed to keep that separate. I think that's why, going back to the other question you asked me, I never had many friends or tried to make many friends in the area I was working in. That was too transitory. That was a job I did, but know, making friends, proper friends with people you love and share your life, that's a different thing altogether.
Before we let you leave, there have been so many stories that come up in and around your interviews and how they've occurred and what's happened behind the scenes. Can I just put a few of them to you and you can either dispel them or confirm them? Would that be all right?
Sure, absolutely.
So Orson Welles, he was the one that insisted you get rid of your list of questions beforehand and just said, let's
call
sit down
them up and said, I said, what do I do now? And he said, let's talk. And he did. I did for an hour and a half. And he was the interview that convinced the big guys in Hollywood that their stars could appear on the show. If Orson Welles did it, talking now back in 1970, 71, 72, then their stars could do it. So it was very crucial in the success of the show.
Given, though, that you said preparation is everything, what was that like when the subject turns around and rips up your notes in front of you?
It's a heart stopper, but you know, with somebody who try not to so faint. Yeah. But with somebody like Welles, what you did know was that you know you could ask him anything at all, and he'd make it entertaining and fascinating, as he did. Mm. He was wonderful to work with.
True or false? Peter Sellers agreed to only take part if he was allowed to come on as somebody else.
That's right. He rang up the night before I called him the night before the show, and he wanted to back out. And I said, well, you've got to tell me why. I mean, why are you backing out of the show tomorrow? And after a while, he said, because I can't come on as myself. And I, losing my temper, said, well, for God's sake, come on as somebody else. And he said, can I? And he came on as a German officer with a helmet on, a German helmet and a rifle. Right. And I did the first 20 minutes of the war. Strange people I talked to.
What about the fact that, was it Richard Burton's interview that actually you ended up having mostly the people mad up in the audience dressed in kitchen whites because they came from the staff of the BBC canteen because you had to record his chat?
He'd just come out of a rehab in the Swiss hospital, and I did the interview with him. We had to have it before midday because the likelihood was midday I might start drinking again. And so he was tense and nervous when he walked on, and we'd forgotten to get an audience in. And so we had to ring up around the BBC, and the only people we could get were resting chefs. So when he came around the corner of my show and into view of the audience, and he could see the audience, all he could see was about 60 to 80 or 100 people dressed in white clothes. He thought he was back in Switzerland in a nursing home. And he nearly turned around and walked away. And that was the fact of it, yeah.
And finally, is it true that you've said that the most remarkable man you ever interviewed was Muhammad Ali? Would that still be true?
Well, I mean, there's nobody I can think of in the past, of, I know, 50 years, who's come anywhere near him for being that unusual, extraordinary package. He wasn't altogether pleasant, and he wasn't altogether likeable, but by God, he was interesting and fascinating. And I was very lucky that I interviewed him four times. And the four times that I interviewed him over 10, 12 years was the moment of him being world champion to his decline, to being that shambling wreck that sadly we saw that shuffled off stage.
Mm. Well, Sir Michael Parkinson, we'll look forward to seeing you come on stage at Festival Theatre October. We'll look forward to welcoming you here to Adelaide. And thanks very much for talking to me.
Thank you, Alison. Thank you. Goodbye.